Earlier this month, I travelled to the European Planetary Science Congress, which brought together astronomers from around Europe for a week at University College London, discussing the latest observations of the solar system's planets. Of course, the red planet Mars has been in the news lately because of the superb images that the Curiosity rover has been returning from its surface. But in his talk, Lewis Dartnall from the University of Leicester was looking further ahead, talking about the preparations for the European Space Agency's forthcoming ExoMars mission, which will hopefully be touching down on the Martian surface in 2018.
That's what we think with Mars, is it's once been a very, very Earth-like place. I mean, we see a lot of evidence for ancient rivers and lakes. The problem with Mars now, today, billions of years later, after this ancient sign of a habitable environment, is the entire planet has suffered some kind of environmental catastrophe, and the environmental conditions across the whole world on Mars have deteriorated. So it's no longer a lovely, warm, wet place that would have been suitable for life to get emerged and then evolve over long periods of time. It's a very dry, desiccating, kind of freeze-dried desert environment. So Mars today is very, very hard for life to survive on the surface. And what we're looking for are the signs of ancient life, primordial life, that might be preserved in the rocks, waiting for us to come along with our rovers and dig up and find.
What makes us think that Mars might have been different in the past?
So it's down to the evidence of the landforms that we can see with our satellites. We've basically got spy satellites orbiting Mars now, taking incredibly high resolution paparazzi zoom lens type photos of Mars. And we see a whole diversity of different landforms that suggest this warmer, wetter environment. And we see a lot of things which are clearly snaking rivers, meandering rivers, and places where there's been like a delta as the river kind of enters into like a lake or something and dumps all of its sediment. We see all this evidence, but we no longer see water on the face of Mars, at least not liquid water, although there is a lot of ice still on the surface around the poles as polar ice caps. And the important thing for life on Mars, for astrobiology, is how long is that water on Mars liquid and therefore suitable and available for life? What window of opportunity did life have to get started? What were the chemical conditions in that water? Were they conducive for life, or were they perhaps too acidic or too salty? And these are all the questions we're trying to answer right now with our robots, with our robotic explorers that we're sending to Mars, basically equipped and bristling with lots of different bits of kit and instruments and equipment to test Mars in different ways and tell us as much as we can about the environment on this other world as we explore it.
How are you going about looking for evidence that there was life billions of years ago on that surface?
Well, it's a very, very similar question to trying to find the earliest signs of life on our own homeworld, on Earth, and trying to date that first emergence of cells on Earth. And we use very, very similar techniques. We're hoping to use very similar techniques on Mars and look for the telltale quirks of the chemistry that's left behind, perhaps even billions of years after that life has fallen extinct or died. And so we're looking for quirks of biochemistry as distinct from geochemistry, the chemistry of the rocks that are dead and still there, and trying to find that kind of smoking gun from life.
But could those molecules still be there 4 billion years after they were in organisms?
Well, what we know from looking in similar situations on Earth, that some things are very recalcitrant. They stick around for long periods of time. Things like DNA aren't, but they break down very rapidly. But there are other signs of life that we'd be looking for. And we leave behind telltale signatures to do with the ratio of different isotopes between, for example, carbon-12 or carbon-13. And life leaves behind a particular indicator in that ratio of carbon isotopes, for example, that it was once there. Or if you find very simple molecules like amino acids, all life on Earth uses left-handed amino acids, one of two possibilities. And if we go to Mars and we find amino acids, it doesn't mean life itself, but it does tell us at least the building blocks, the Lego bricks for making life were there. But if we go to Mars and we find amino acids and we also realise that they're all either left-handed variety or the right-handed variety, we've got a good, unambiguous signal that there was life that's kind of degraded and left behind those amino acids.
People talk about the radiation environment on the surface of Mars, the ultraviolet light, the solar wind particles that bombard that surface, breaking apart those molecules. How far do you have to dig down to expect to find them?
Yes, this is the particular focus of my research and the cosmic radiation environment on Mars, which is a big issue for sending human astronauts to Mars and not having them die on the way. And it's also a big issue for astrobiology and finding life that perhaps is still alive but dormant in the surface of Mars, or trying to work out how long those signs of life stick around for before they're rubbed out and degraded or erased by this radiation. And some of the computer simulation work, some of the modelling work I've been doing, gives us answers to what that kind of radiation environment is like, what kind of dose rates you get from the radiation and the top couple of meters. And this is particularly important for a mission we're launching to Mars to look for signs of life in 2018 called the ExoMars rover, because for the first time ever, we're sending a robot to Mars with a proper length drill. It's got a 2-meter drill bit. And up until now, we've scooped around on the surface dust with a little robotic arm, or the NASA Curiosity rover at the moment is basically sticking its little finger, tiny, short little, couple inches long drill into the surface of rocks. And what we really want to do is get a proper arm's length underground and get stuff from deeper underground on Mars where it's been protected from all this radiation for long periods of time, and then analyze it and scrutinize that Martian soil to look for these signs of life that might be there.
You're working with an instrument called a Raman spectrometer. What does that do?
So Raman is a very neat piece of kit, and it's used in lots of different applications on Earth. It's very tried and tested. And if you've ever been through the airport and gone through the metal detector and maybe get pulled to one side and they kind of swab you down your bag and then put it into a box to look for signs of explosives, that box they put it into, that piece of kit, is a Raman spectrometer. So it can pick up signs of molecules indicative of explosives. And it's also very, very good at picking up the organic molecules or signs of life. And it's proven itself time and time again to be incredibly sensitive to find very trace amounts of bacterial life and microbial life in some of the most hostile and extreme places on Earth, like the dry valleys in Antarctica and the South Pole, or the Atacama Desert, one of the driest deserts on Earth, which is in South America. And for the first time ever, we're taking a Raman spectrometer to Mars, aboard ExoMars, to apply it to a new question, which is, can we find signs of Martian life on the surface or on the top meter or two with a drill?
I'm right in thinking you've just got results back from some tests with a Raman spectrometer to see how sensitive it might be.
Some of the work I've been presenting here at this Europlanets conference in London this week is tests I've run on a Raman spectrometer. So not obviously the exact same one that we'll be sending to Mars, but a similar one. And looking at a particular molecule that's very widespread amongst microbial life, which are carotenoids. They help to protect and shield cells from various kinds of damage. And what I've been looking at is how that signature of the carotenoids in different kinds of cells stands up to the radiation. How quickly is that fingerprint of these molecules in the Raman spectrum degraded and erased and destroyed by radiation? And therefore, what kind of timescales we can talk about for finding remnant extinct life on Mars?
So ExoMars is launching to Mars in 2018, but what are you really looking forward to in the next decade or so of Mars exploration?
What we're ideally looking forward towards as planetary explorers and astrobiologists is the kind of next stepping stone after missions like Curiosity and ExoMars, which we basically miniaturize an entire laboratory, slap some wheels on, give it a nuclear or a radioisotope power generator or solar panels, drive it around and look at different samples. But what we really want to be able to do is pick some choice samples from Mars and then bring them all the way back to Earth, because we've not done that deliberately yet. Although we've got a few samples of the Martian surface from meteorites, we want to pick the ones we think got the best chance of having life in, because then what you get to do is scrutinize and study those samples of Mars with all of the laboratories all the way around the world, with some of the most high-tech, best-equipped bits of instrumentation to find those trace signs of life that we think might be in there. And this is called a Mars sample return mission, and that will be hopefully coming up in the coming decades. That will hopefully happen within my career.
Lewis Dartnell from the University of Leicester, talking to me at the European Planetary Science Congress in London.